Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, this is World Form Zen Fighting Champion John Chung, and you're listening to the AMAA Legends and Pioneers Radio Blog Show with Professor Gary Lee and the Sport Karate Museum Archives, protecting the history, one warrior at a time. Enjoy.
Aloha, everybody, and let's mahalo. We've got a really, really great show tonight. I got a special surprise guest, and I've got a guest talking about his books, and then, of course, I've got the Wolverine, AJ, and Albert go on in a few minutes. But before I do, I want to introduce my producer, who's put on me for 7 years on the air. Hachi Bowen, are you there?
Yes, sir, I am. How are you doing?
I'm doing great, sir. How are you? I hope you're safe and sound. And tell me what's going on with the AMAA and what we're doing with our new book, our ring, and maybe your podcast and all the other things you're doing. Let us know what's going on with Hachi Bowen.
Well, sir, we got a lot of positive things going on. First of all, we're building some teams and putting some things together because, we have several products, several books we're doing. But, the AMA is moving forward and trying to help people, martial artists, open the doors of their schools, giving them new tools to work with, really trying to be a support, introduce them to network marketing, really trying to help them to be able to figure out, how did it work and thrive in a new economy. And I think that word thrive in a new economy, this is an excellent time to do that if you're willing to diversify yourself some and some of the things that you actually do. So, those are some of the things that's happening. We have the new book coming out for you and supporting the Sport Karate Museum. And, I'm really excited about this project because, it's something I think that's needed for the Sport Karate Museum. You have the museum, which, people will go, but now we're adding the book that people can learn about sport karate. And I say it all the time, I have no idea where I would be right this moment if it had not been for sport karate, of being a competitor, being a tournament producer for over 40 years, with the AMAA Nationals and with the Durham Karate Open. I have no idea. This is an excellent time for us to recognize the contribution that sport karate has made to the martial arts. Gives an opportunity to honor some of those people that have been forgotten about. I think people, sometimes when I talk to people, they think it's yesterday that they were known. But for, many martial artists, nobody knows who you are. But the thing is that you have contributed so much. And so with the museum project, being able to put people to write their bios. You're the best person in the world to tell your story. Write about it, put it in there. This book is going to be distributed worldwide. Right now we're working with getting it into libraries. So we have a lot going on with the book. We have Sifu Goldberg's book we're producing, and that book is going to be coming out in January. This book will be coming out in October. We have a 50-year book for martial artists that have been in the martial arts for 50 years, a biography book, celebrating those particular people. The podcast is really about sharing a positive message that, your success lies within you. You have to access it, giving people the tools, meditation classes that we're certifying people for. So, we're really bringing a lot to the martial arts and, really trying to help people that are willing to help themselves be able to move forward.
Well, thank you so much for your information and allowing us to be on the air for 7 years. And we got a great show tonight. And with what you said to us, we appreciate it so much. And we'll go on with the show. AJ, are you there? AJ Perry.
I'm here. How are you,
buddy? Good. I'm doing good, AJ. How's Ohio?
Ohio's doing good. We have some great weather today. Almost 70 degrees.
beautiful. Had all the doors open in the school tonight.
Cool. Dean, are you there? Dean Pyle.
Yes.
I've got a great show tonight, Dean. This is Dean Pyle and A.J. Perry. These are my co-hosts for the show.
Hey, bud.
And they put up with me. And God bless you, Dean. Are you not knocking anybody out tonight?
Yeah, I actually am. So when you call me by my name, I get confused because I don't hear that very often. So
okay.
It takes me a minute to get over it.
Deep Dog or Wolverine, but stay tuned, guys. I'm introducing my special guest. But, you know, Dexter Kennedy is someone that I met a few months ago in Greenville, and he does books on professional team aspect, but he comes from somebody very special. And I understand he's a special surprise guest tonight. So, Dexter, are you there?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. I'm here.
Why don't you introduce our special surprise guest for me?
So, wow, this guy here, man, is like he was like a father to me as I was coming up to 16 years old and taught me the basics of fighting and martial arts. I ended up being a form competitor for his school. And he was nationally rated, one of the first nationally rated black belts in South Carolina. I want to introduce to you my sensei and teacher, Mike Genova.
Hey, Poodle, hey, where you at? Are you there?
Hey, Gary, how are you?
Hey, man, I'm so excited to have you as a special surprise guest. Now, Poodle, you raised Dexter, right? Gave him all his information and his energy in karate, correct?
Well, you know, Dexter's being very humble. Dexter was in the karate school with Bruce Brucci and Keith Vitale and Joey Shiflett and Michael Goldman and Marty Knight and John Oreck and Gary Rome, and all these guys were coming in from Greenville, Bobby Tucker, Sam Chapman. So, you know, Dexter was in a good stable of fighters.
Yeah. Well,
and he hung in there with all of them.
How you doing, man? You're teaching in Columbia, South Carolina, right?
I am. You know, I heard your first guy talking about what he's doing to help schools and stuff. And
yes, sir.
I wanted to let you know that when COVID first hit, that I formed a task force here in South Carolina with a member from every city in the state, just friends of mine, and we met through Zoom, and we met in person, and we've supported each other throughout. And we bring in mayors and lieutenant governors and county council people and economy people from OSHA, DHEC, and just to find out what we could do to stay open. And we've shared ideas, and all the schools are still open that we formed in that group.
Yes, sir. Well, I wanted to tell you something, too. It was very, really cool. It was very honored to be able to put you guys together in November, and now you guys are going to press Sam. I mean, God bless you, Mike Genova, or Poodle, your nickname. But, you know, I want to tell you this, too, publicly and on the air. You were probably the best defensive fighter I saw back in the 70s. You had a sidekick. It was outrageous. You hit anybody with that sidekick. That was great, man. I love it.
Well,
I love
you know, as we look back, Gary, I only had a handful of people that could get inside that sidekick. And, you know, I won't count Keith Vitale because we were best friends, but Ray McCallum was about the only one that could just, you know, push me aside and get by my sidekick. And I fought Ray 3 times in tournaments, but I spent 11 days with him at Chuck Norris' school in California, and he and Bobby Tucker and I would fight every morning and every night. And Ray McCallum's about the only guy that could get inside just about any time he wanted.
Well, you know, Bobby is probably the most fastest person we ever saw him. Ray was the kid, man. He was amazing. But, by the way, you mentioned Chuck. We got to say happy birthday to Chuck and Lynn Jackson and Cynthia Rothrock. God bless them. They're happy birthday to them, Mike.
Jimmy Cook, too.
Chuck,
Jimmy Cook is on the 11th.
Chuck is having a birthday party. I got an invitation to it, but he's going to be behind a glass wall. So I don't want to go all the way to Texas to wave to Chuck behind a glass wall. So We won't
well,
be
we're
going to
honor
tonight.
Chuck and Gina May 8th in Houston. And we're
going
to be doing something. Yeah, we're going to honor. And they're working with Kickstart. And we're roasting Al Garza. So it's going to be really a lot of fun. But, Mike Genova, God bless you, buddy. You're such a good memory.
Well, listen, Gary, you're doing wonderful work. And I pray for you. And God bless you, Gary. And I hope you have some comfort tonight. Dexter is like he said, I consider him family. He's a wonderful, wonderful human being, and I'm so lucky that he was in my life, and I'm glad I was able to help him with a young person. And he sure has turned out to be an excellent human being.
Well, we're going to have a
thank
great
you,
interview tonight. Poodle, thank you so much for surprising me and the guests, and God bless you. Bye,
God Jennifer, bless you. You guys have a great night, and I wish you all the best. Good night.
Thank you, Mike.
Good night. Thank you.
Hey, Dexter, that was very special. Thank you so much.
Definitely.
Now,
definitely.
AJ, Dean, you guys realize who Mike Genova was?
Oh, yeah.
Good, good. That was really special. Now, Dexter, tell me about your books, or let's talk about the team professional aspect, because I think that's really interesting and may more or less introduce what you've done with this, please.
Okay, cool. Sure. So just to give you a little timeline, in 2003, I introduced Professional Point Team League at Dixie Nationals, which is Dewey Irwin's tournament in Columbia. In 2009, I franchised the concept and made it available through the franchise registry. So SBA backed loans of up to 80% for anybody who wanted to own a team franchise. I'm going to get into more detail later on and explain about the books. Then I wrote and published Taking on the NFL, the National Martial Arts League. Then I rebooted in 2019, rewrote and retitled the work, The Point Fighting in a Professional Martial Arts League, and added the Investors Edition. So basically what it is I personally, as a person coming out of, in 1997, in 94 I retired from the military, so if I have a little cough or whatever, tingle, that's one of the things I brought back from the war when I fought in Desert Storm. But what I did was is
I go what branch of the military?
In 1997. Say again.
What branch of the military?
Oh, I was in the Army. I was in the Army during Desert Storm.
Hurrah!
Thank you.
Army guy.
Yeah, Army guy. Army guy. But when I retired in 94, I wanted to have something to do to stay fit. So I got back in the tournament competition. And I come to the realization that as a black belt, having been a black belt for years and had won so many tournaments, trophies and everything, there was nowhere else to go to graduate. There wasn't a higher level. I competed in NBL for a while, and they had at any given time you could have 300 to 500 of the same weight class champions spread throughout the United States and the world. So I said, the only way I know that these champions could fight against one another is if they were on teams in a league. So I said, hey, let me lay this foundation for a martial arts team league like the NFL. So therefore, I wrote the book, Taking on the NFL, the National Martial Arts League. I got it on the registry. I had franchise concept laid out, so anybody who wanted to own a team, they'd actually own a team like the NFL, like you do the Dallas Cowboys, the Carolina Panthers, such as that. And the way the concept was going to work was if you were a tournament promoter and you owned a tournament, I was trying to get it so your tournament could be the professional team tryout location for that professional team and represent that city or state in the National Martial Arts League. So went on the road in 2003, advertised through, got sponsorships with the Sheraton and the Holiday Inns, and couldn't get any takers, couldn't get anybody interested in owning a franchise team. I think the concept was too new of a concept, but it was basically taking our nighttime finals that we have at every tournament in the world and making it so there was teams against teams in a spectator environment where people could sit down and watch it, enjoy it, like they do basketball, and teach them, educate them to the rules through these events. So that's pretty much you know, quick, down dirty of how the taking on the NFL was. So I got the team logos. I got everything laid out. It was a reboot of the uniform, a new upgraded martial arts uniform, which was more like a superhero type uniform instead of the old pajamas, geese, and stuff that we're used to. So I felt since the martial arts, the point karate, point sport karate, sport martial arts needed a reboot, I could do this through a National Martial Arts League to give all those black belts that have won tournament after tournament after tournament something to graduate and aspire to be.
I find it really interesting. AJ, you got a question for me? Dean, you got a question?
Not yet.
Mm-hmm. Okay, how about Dean? You got one?
I got a question for you.
Okay, go ahead.
Did you say Dan or Wolverine? Sorry.
No.
Sorry,
I said Wolverine, Dean. I want you to ask a question, but AJ's going to ask one.
I got
first.
A question.
Go ahead, AJ.
Here. My question is, why do you think martial arts needs a reboot?
Well, I think that the advertisement for martial arts for at least the past 10 years has been MMA. I think traditional schools, to compete with MMA, for all of, and if you're a person who just has a traditional school and you're doing fine with your students, you're probably fine. But the NFL doesn't need any marketing because every school in America has a football program. They all have a basketball program. They have a baseball program. Normally, when you hear about children ended up in martial arts, it's because they got some issues or some problems or whatever that need to be resolved. They need to understand, respect, discipline, you know, all the benefits that come with martial arts. So I just thought that when you think of sport karate, because I've had a lot of people that said, first of all, martial arts should not be a sport, but yet I competed for at least 15 years sport karate. I think it's good. That workout, good exercise, gives me a chance to go ahead and hone my craft before I get into a situation out in the street. So the reason why I thought it needed a reboot is because, you know, uniforms, the old gi uniforms, I thought for a professional league, it would need something different to at least get people to aspire to compete in.
Okay.
Dean, you got a question, Dean? Wolverine.
No, I don't really have a question. I mean, I remember when they started putting the teams together and all that stuff, so in the NBL, so, you know, I don't really have a question. I'm just taking it all in right now and listening. I don't, you know, we don't have to worry about the stuff from, you know, going from MMA to sport karate because, you know, here we have teams that do both, so you know, we don't necessarily have to worry about teams.
Well,
that, you know,
a,
go back
I've
and
got
forth
a question, Dexter. I got a question. Okay, now we talked about it, but I want to say something. In your team concept, you'll have a super lightweight, middleweight, heavyweight, lightweight. Correct? They'll have their different weight divisions.
So what I was the way I envisioned it is when you have these national tournaments or whatever those black belt fighting divisions are, it would mirror those black belt fighting divisions to create the team. So each year, those tournaments, those annual tournaments that determine the professional team to represent that city state in the national championship, those divisions would be determined by that national level tournament. And those folks would end up on the team. So I could even see people, you know, I fought till I was 45, 50. So there would be 50-year-olds on the team. They would have a coach and they'd have a manager. I was trying to create a career progression path for martial artists so that after I became a fighter and I retired as a fighter, I could end up being a coach or a manager. And, you know, I actually even went as far as having retirement plans in this thing. I had it set up so they had medical benefits. I mean, we're talking about a national program for martial arts professionals.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Well, you know, here's something to talk about. I believe that age is a factor. I can't see a 50-year-old fighting an 18-year-old. I understand that. But what
it wouldn't be a 50-year-old fighting an 18-year-old. It'd be the 50-year-old from that tournament fighting the 50-year-old.
I know. I understand that. I understand that. My problem is, back in the day, it used to be just lightweight and heavyweight. Then the middleweight started. There was light, middle, and heavy. That was cool because normally you had the best fighters end up in the middle. But now promoters, I guess they wanted to copy full contact. They got super lightweight, middleweight, light middleweight, light heavyweight, heavyweight, super heavyweight. And you got all these divisions, and you don't know who the hell the best fighter is. And, you know, I love the idea of a team concept because it's a team. But I don't know. I just got this thing about weight. I don't think weight's important. I think that the competent to full contact and foot karate should not have been done by weight. I mean, that's just my opinion. But, hey, AJ, how you feel about that? Gene, how you feel about that?
It's funny you were talking about that, Gary. I was just thinking back about a tournament back in the late 70s where I remember this, and it was down in Akron, Ohio. It was black belt division. It was in the finals. And there was a real tall guy. You know, this guy was like 6'3", 6'4". And he was fighting a lightweight. And this guy was probably 5'6", maybe 130 tops. And this guy that was 130 gave him a run for his money. You know, the guy that was, you know, tall ended up winning. But and I agree with you there as far as being a weight, not having a weight as a standard. And, you know, just let them fight because it made for an exciting outcome.
Well, you mentioned tall and heavyweight. I got to say something. God bless Kenny Ferguson, one of the great fighters from Ohio. We lost him. And condolences to his friends and family and his wife. I mentioned that because Kenny was tall and he was tough.
He was 6'4".
But Dexter, you understand what we're talking about, the weight and everything? And guys, if you're not talking, you need to mute your phone, please. Because I pick up background noise and they'll like that. So, Dexter.
Yes, sir.
You understand what I'm talking about? The different weights and everything. And I understand about age, but the weight. I've always had a thing about, I don't understand why they added all the weight positions. And, people start complaining compared to themselves, the full contact fighters. And you can't do that. Point fighting is a different game. So,
you know, that was one of the things that made the finals exciting.
What's that?
You never know what you got. You have a light guy, lightweight guy against a tall heavyweight like Monster Man Eddie, or you got a middleweight against a lightweight. You never knew what you had.
Slim is coming to.
Hey Gary,
Slim Evans is coming to.
Gary, let me finish. Gary,
well, go ahead. We'll finish it.
It was like martial arts stew. You never knew what you were going to get.
Right. Well, as you were saying, Slim Evans weighed 140 pounds, and Monster Man weighed 280 pounds, and they fought each other. So weight wasn't an important factor.
Right. That's what I'm getting at.
Right. Dexter, do you understand our passion, what we're talking about?
Yep. I understand.
Well, where are you at now?
I've always been the smaller guy in the tournament to fight, even in the NBL when they had the weight class for the 173. I think it was 173 for my age, 35 on up at that time. I'm 5'7", and I'm muscular. So
Wolverine,
I always
are
had
you
the
there?
6'4
Wolverine.
Guy. What? Because
Wolverine!
Yes! Hey, sir, yes!
Well, put in your 2 cents about weight and about these team concepts. How do you feel about it?
Well, I mean, as far as point fighting, I mean, a lot of times in point fighting, the advantage goes to the smaller guy because he can move around and he's a lot quicker than the big guy. But in MMA, right. in Vale Tudo, I mean, that I used to do, you know, if it was a weight and it was a fight, it, you know, the weight can make a big difference. However, a smaller yep. guy can win if he knows what he's doing. But, you know, somebody that's bigger and stronger, if they get the top position or the advanced position, that, you know, it does give them the upper hand. You know, but in a real fight on the street, we can't choose our weight class, so we have to be ready to fight against
well,
all
I'm
weight.
About
so that's
T.
why we do that.
Wolverine, I'm talking about if T should be versus team, it doesn't matter about weight. It should just be whatever the team is. And, you know, I don't know. That's how I feel about that.
I mean, yeah, that's fine, you know, and point fighting with the team, it's whatever it is, but you just have to look at the fact that, you know, a heavyweight fighter or, okay, let's say a lightweight fighter fights a middleweight or a cruiserweight fighter. Now, if you get somebody that's around 190 pounds, they're still pretty dang fast, but they've got the potential to throw a bone-breaking kick. You know, so the lighter fighter, he's fast, but, you know, 190-pound fighter is fast also because he's not carrying as much weight. So, you know, it's just to whichever one, you know, whatever your preference is. You know, if you're doing it and then everybody has control and act like they got sense, you know, like point fighting is supposed to be, then, you know, it really doesn't matter. But if it's where you have to do damage and stop the competitor, then, you know, weight definitely could have a toll
on a team that could be like two middleweights or two lightweights and a heavyweight. It doesn't have to be, you know, weight division fight weight division. Dex, how do you feel about that?
Well, the way I have it laid out in my book is the franchise team owners, they would have they would determine the weight classes for their tournaments.
Right.
And then those tournament teams, the teams determined from the tournaments. So it wouldn't be a decision I made. The owners of the teams would make those decisions.
Right.
And they would all they'd have
AJ.
Yes.
AJ.
Yeah.
Hello, AJ.
I asked
you
three times.
Okay. Listen. You're a small guy. Have you ever fought a heavyweight before?
Yeah, I'm not small.
What did you do? Did you get squished?
Got it.
Or did you fight?
I'm almost 5'10", 190. God, I'm not small.
Yeah, you are. I thought you were 5'7". Dean, he's lying. He's standing on his shoes. No, wait a minute, he stands on glass. I forget. Okay.
Yeah, and then I got
a new title. I fought heavyweights before. In fact, I remember when you were allowed to, I used to step it up a division.
I heard that you used to put weights in your groin cup so you could be fighting heavyweights. Is that true? Dean, he did. He used to put weights in his groin cup so you could fight the heavyweights. Dexter, you ever heard anybody do that, something crazy?
Nah, I never heard anybody do anything crazy like that.
Well, AJ
really wanted to. Guy like that really wants to fight.
Transgender type stuff.
Well, no,
we're
not talking about
that. You put weights in there, you're gonna get, you're leaving room for an accident, man. If you're using metal,
we'll
talk
about that in a few minutes. But going back to the team, I think that teams should be picked, like you said, by the owners or franchise people, and then pick the very best. Because I was very lucky. I was on the Sherman Oilers for 12 years. And, of course, you had the Trans World Oil team, and you had the Budweiser team, and you had some really incredible teams. And
you were in Pee Wee Division.
Now you're learning.
Who's talking?
Hey, Gary?
What
Gary, they said you were in Pee Wee Division.
Leave me alone, AJ. I'm going to start picking on you again.
Hey. The only, you know, there's a lot of benefits to teams, you know, but, you know, in my opinion, and AJ probably, I mean, he comes from the same era I do. Well, you know, everybody here does pretty much, but I felt like that teams sometimes gave an unfair advantage because people would crowd around and want to pull for these teams because of the money. And there was a lot of people out there that were better than the people on the team and were winning, but, you know, they would get overlooked, you know, because of stuff like the last 4 years that I competed in NASCAR, you know, which was the past 4 years that NASCAR was competing, you know, I had a chance to be on Team AKA and different teams, but I chose to stay on my own school team to represent my teachers and what they had taught me, because a lot of these people, the teachers make them good. Like AJ can have a student that he's put hard work into, made good, and they go get on a team. Then once the team drops them, you know, when they're not doing anything, then who do they go calling back to AJ and say, hey, will you take me back? Because I went and got on this team. You know, it did. I saw teams cause a lot of controversy also, and I've also been that where teams would be
going in and out
on me because it was, you know, we were promoting our school team rather than a money team, and we were winning, and it was causing conflict, and then next thing you know, it's a whole blow-up, you know.
Okay, Gene, you got to talk to the microphone because you're talking to, you're going in and out, buddy. Okay.
Hey, Gary.
Now, Dexter, okay. We're going to be back in
just
a minute.
Because I'm dancing around.
Hey, Gary, okay. One thing I'd like to say to Dexter is that it sounds like he's got a lot of thought and a lot of passion and a lot of time put into the thought of his book. And I commend him for that. I do. We're not doing, you know, we're not trying to be downers on you, Dexter. You know, we're just kind of running ideas.
Yeah, well, he's got a lot of good thoughts.
Yeah, we're just talking. But listen, Dexter, don't go nowhere. We're going to come right back. I've got to bring on Dr. Lee and talk about the hologram. But we're going to come back. We're going to play the Legends name game. This is where I hit you with some names, and you got to talk about them, whether you know them or like them or whatever. It's parts unknown. And be like 2 minutes, you get to talk about people I throw at you. Okay, Dexter?
All right, let's give it a shot.
Okay, buddy. Hang loose. I'll be right back. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, that's Mr. Dexter Kennedy, and he has the idea. He wrote some books that he'll be in May 8th in Houston, Texas. We'll be honoring Chuck and Gene Norris and honoring Al Garza, roasting him. And Dexter will be there with his books and talking more concept. I'll be right back with him, but right now I'll bring on my dear friend, the one and only Dr. Reginald Lee. Dr. Rod Reginald, are you there?
Yes, good evening. How you doing
today?
Hey,
buddy. How are you? How's the things on the front line?
It's hanging in there. We're seeing the light at the end of the tunnel with the vaccines. We're very hopeful for that to help solve our issues with the COVID pandemic. So, you know, we're really having really good feelings about this vaccine.
Yes, sir. Well, ladies and gentlemen, this is Dr. Reginald Lee. He is a black belt under the late, great Rick Wigginton, but he also invented with Rip Shanahan and Marie Shanahan a hologram that will attack you and enhance your training. But he's going to explain it to you, and it's really, really interesting. We've got a new website up, and he's going to explain that to you, too. But we got to be building the History General portals and telling the history of sport karate within his brain. So, ladies and gentlemen, Dr. Reginald Lee. Dr. Reggie, tell them what it's all about, buddy.
Yeah, thank you, sir. I just wanted to, thought it may be a good idea that I speak a little bit about the history of the evolution of the virtual reality headset. It all started around 1987 by a company called VPL, called Visual Program Lab. And that company first coined the term virtual reality. It was the first company to, believe it or not, sell virtual reality goggles. Their goggles was called the iPhone 1. It's not to be confused with the phone company, the Apple phone, but it was called iPhone, E-Y-E, iPhone 1. And guess what that cost of that first headset was? Professor Gary Lee, do you have an idea? Or anybody in the audience?
It was I remember when they first started, it was like you had to have a high-end PC, and it was like $1,000 for a headset. But now, as you explained, they have the Oscar Quest 2, which is like $299. It's really expensive. Yeah. And, you know, but I'm really proud of the platform they have, but you know, going in front of the hologram and the new website you put up, it's really good.
So,
I went to it tonight. That was really good, sir.
Yeah, so really quickly, that iPhone 1 was an initial price of $9,400. The
wow.
upgraded version of the iPhone HRX was priced at $49,000 for the headset. So, believe it or not, we've
gone
a long
way. Way out of my range, Reggie. Way out of my
range. Yeah, we've gone a long way. Now we can introduce the Oculus Quest. That is the platform that I basically utilize or program with. And the 64 gigabytes cost $299. And the 256 gigabytes are $299. So there's big discrepancy, and it's a lot affordable right now compared to when it first came out. In regards to our program, my partner, my marketing director, and my developers are super excited about SetVR, Self-Defense Enhanced Training in Virtual Reality, as a platform whereby you can practice your skills in self-defense whenever and wherever you want. The program is compact and portable, and you can even take it anywhere you travel, even during a pandemic, as we are right now with the COVID pandemic. You can continue to practice your skills in self-defense while practicing social distancing. With this Oculus headset, the Oculus Rift or Oculus Quest headset, you'll be transported to a virtual reality platform whereby a hologram will confront and attack you when you least expect it with random attacks. The goal of SetVR is to have you to be able to neutralize the attack or threat that is sudden, unpredictable, and random. To practice and improve your skills in evasion through angular, linear, or circular movements, to avoid and to place you in an opportunistic position of an advantage for neutralization, as you practice to improve your skills in timing, speed, accuracy, and develop muscle memory. And my goal is to develop what's called a reflex response to a threat or a stimulus to neutralize an attack without hesitation, as you would with a reflex response as you place your hand on a hot stove and you quickly remove your hand because of the threat or pain against a threat or a stimulus. You can continue to practice with this program. You'll be able to practice what you've been taught in your dojos in regards to techniques, katas, and forms to apply your techniques against this hologram that will attack you randomly. We've implemented a program of kicking, punching, and knife attacks. Up front and close are very, very dangerous and very, very deadly. We've implemented that program to our program, and once you try that, you'll be very, very addicted to the program. I almost guarantee it, because we've had people put the headset on when we went down to South Carolina, and they just raved about it. So the program is about virtual reality against a hologram that will attack you when you least expect it. The program involves metrics that will record the number of successful punches, the number of blocks, the number of evasions, whether you're right or left side dominant, and record your endurance as recorded as time spent in the experience. You'll be able to learn the importance of creating a diversion when you grasp the attacker's arms or wrists. You create a natural response, a 1 to 3 second pause, a window of opportunity for neutralization. We've also implemented a program of what's called mindfulness, of stretching, meditation, and also we'll introduce you to your own personal yoga instructor. SetVR will continue to update our program to help you to practice and maximize the application of self-defense when you want and where you want. We've updated our website as of today, and our website is called setvr.app, setvr.app. So please join us and to take a look at our new website. On our website, you can see that on our program that we are endorsing Professor Gary Lee and the Sports Karate Museum to be the future platform of his vision of the History Portal. With that being said, Professor Gary, some few words about the History Portal.
Well, thank you, Reggie. Imagine everybody that you have a village, be an Oriental village with storefronts, and you can go in and you can purchase swords or vitamins or clothing, of course. But every time you go into the store, you'll get educated, you'll get smarter, like who is Chuck Norris, who is Jean LaBelle, what is the difference between Taekwondo and Tangsudo, what is the difference of Kung Fu and Gung Fu. You're going to get smarter. You're going to learn about karate in America. Eventually, you'll walk out into the forest, and the hologram will appear, and you have to defeat it. Now, the hologram could be a karate guy, a kung fu guy, maybe a judo guy, whatever, that you have to defeat it. And when you do, then I will appear and I'll say, okay, Dexter Kennedy, are you educated? And Dexter will look at his backpack, and I will, and he's answered all the questions. He's a hologram, but I'll say, Dexter, I'm sorry, you have to go back. And Dexter has to go back and get smarter and smarter and smarter about American sport karate. He does. He works out into a forest again, and this time the hologram is a samurai with a katana, a wakizashi, and a tanto. And Dexter has to defeat him with kabuto weaponry, you know, like a sai or a tampo or a nunchuck or, you know, weapons from Okinawa. So he's getting smarter, learning what the difference between Japanese weapons and Okinawa weapons. And this time I'll appear again. I'll say, Dexter, are you educated? And this time he is. Take his hand, lead to the gate, and the gate will open, and there will be the portals. And we're starting out with people like Mike Stone, Alan Steen, J. Pat Burleson, Rick Wigson, rest in peace, Jim Harrison, rest in peace, Karen Ian Herdman, and Patrick McCarthy, to talk about their history. So when you walk into their portal, everything from point A to point B, we're teaching you about what they've done for American sport karate. And we're very excited about this project because virtual reality has been around a long time, but there's nothing, trust me, nothing like this enhancement to help your training. And I'm really excited about it. Now, AJ, you tried it on a Greenville. How do you feel about it?
Oh, it's great. I didn't want to take it off. And it was funny because I was watching a lot of the younger students and younger martial artists, and they were having a ball. It's not only a good training aid, but it's fun for the, especially not only adults, because I didn't want to take it off. I had a great time with it. But
you're an old guy, and for an old guy to like it, that's pretty cool.
Hey, you know what? You know, if you have a village, you got to have a village idiot. You know that? So
I guess
something in there for everybody to beat up the village idiot.
We have to pick out the village idiot. Reggie, you hear that?
Yeah, I heard that.
Okay, that'd be funny. Yes. Maybe I'll adjust your village idiot.
Maybe we'll have a hologram acting as the village idiot. Yeah.
Now, Reggie. Again,
if we're going to do a village idiot, I got a couple people we need to hologram in to be the village idiot.
Okay, great.
Okay. Reggie, listen, thank you so much.
Yeah.
And we'll talk more about it every week and upgrade what we're doing. And everybody wants to go to setetvr.app, and that would tell you, explain the demo and everything we're doing. So thank you, Reggie. Thank you so much.
Thank you, sir. Thank you.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, we created something a few months or about a month ago. It's a segment that we've added. It's called 3 Minutes with the Wolverine. Wolverine, are you there?
I'm here, but sometimes it's going to take longer than 3 minutes. I can just tell you that right now.
No.
Oh,
like,
yeah. And the reason
minutes,
why is
so.
Because I keep getting interrupted. So that's
okay,
why.
Okay, well, good. Get used to it. Here we go. Now, 3 Minutes with the Wolverine. This week's topic is transgenders in combat sports. Now, the question is yes or no, but here's my opinion. Eventually, someone's going to get really hurt. So I think they should have their own division. But that's just my opinion. But Wolverine, you got 3 minutes. Go ahead, buddy.
No, they definitely should have their own division. Here's what happened. I know that AJ, you know, put it on one of our guests that got a little mad, but AJ was right in the fact that, you know, you don't start messing with kids because, you know, they haven't decided yet. I mean, people have, I mean, it's already medical knowledge that, you know, that people, their brains change after even 25 and 35. But, you know, when you take a male that is, you know, predominantly a male, and he's you know, went through puberty and all that stuff, you know, his body is physically stronger. Now, can a female beat him? Yeah, I mean, we got Vicky Morrow and some of these people on here that are really good, Peaches and people like that, you know, can hold their own and put a beat down on people. Alex Piles for one, Holly Piles. But the difference is, in a mixed martial arts combat sport where there's so many different areas that can be addressed as far as strength, weight, things like that, you know, a man punching a female is, you know, even if you call yourself a female, is not right. If a dude fought my daughter and then I found out he was a dude, it'd be a whole nother ball game. But, you know, what is happening with this transgender stuff is just going to stop any female athlete from trying to perform. Because, look, the fastest Olympic female runner is not as fast as the fastest boy high school boy runner. So, I mean, you know, so that shows you right there what a difference there is. And then you start having them punch each other. And in MMA, where you can throw knees to the head, elbows to the head, the male's bone density is going to be stronger because he don't produce the estrogen levels. So his bone density is going to be thicker. Therefore, his impacts are going to be much harder. And, you know, it's just opening up a can of worms. If transgenders want to compete, there needs to be a whole separate division. You know, I'm not saying that they shouldn't be allowed to compete. They can compete if they want to. That's fine with me. I don't have a problem with it. I do have a problem with them competing against women just to win. I mean, look, the female's powerlifting record just got smashed by a transgender male. I mean, really, come on. If you want to compete, don't compete in the women's division and be a man just so you can break a record. That is no honor in that whatsoever. That's like some of these people giving themselves rank and blowing smoke up their butt, and then next thing you know, they're telling people they got 5 world titles. It's just a bunch of BS to try to inflate their ego. And look, I understand they have to go through a lot, yeah, but they don't have any business in combat sports. And remember, I told you, my team was the first one that had to compete against a transgender in point karate, or they were like, these guys will sue you if you don't do it. So my guy had to fight a girl that was claiming to be a guy. She got in that hit with one back fist, and it was an easy back fist. Down she goes, and the fight's over. You know, we didn't want to do it, but, you know, when you're put in a place where they're like, no, you got to fight. You got to respect me as your equal. Listen,
if
God is the decider of genders.
Hey, Dean, with that in mind, yeah, I agree with you 100%, is that with that in mind, let's say a male or female transgender, they go through the whole transition, whatever. At the end of the day, they do a DNA, it still comes back a male.
Exactly. Exactly, because once God sends down your genetics, that's who you are, you know. And that's just bottom line. I mean, you know, this COVID relief bill that they just give out, we get 9%, 91% goes overseas to people like Lebanon to do transgender studies. I can do that real quick. Everybody can drop their drawers and we can tell who's male, who's female. It don't take $9 billion to figure that out. You know, it's just a waste of time and it's a waste of money. That money could be going to Americans and vets and people in need, not to do something stupid like study transgender. God done all that in the beginning. But we won't get into a biblical talk, but he done all that to start with. But transgenders need to put themselves in their own categories. It's not fair to the female division. And if you don't see a bunch of females going in that were females, and now they're claiming to be dudes jumping in the UFC wanting to fight some dudes, you don't see none of that. No, you know why? Because they know they're not going to be as strong as those competitors, and they're going to get the speed out of them. But it's these guys that are claiming to be girls. Oh, yeah, they want to go compete against a girl because they know they're going to be stronger. You know, I mean, they know
Wolverine,
that. I mean,
Wolverine, listen to me, what? Buddy. Sooner or later, there's going to be like a Brock Lesnar type dude that thinks he's a woman. And he's going to be out there, you know, with the skeleton and the fist of an animal. And he's going to face a heavyweight woman, which probably probably weighs, what, 150 pounds or whatever for heavyweight women, and he's going to destroy it, and it's going to be bad. So your opinion is so important to me, and thank you for your 3 minutes. And for anybody who wants to get in touch with you, how would they get in touch with you, Wolverine?
They can't. Because I'm like shadow. No, I'm just kidding. They can contact me at 850-368-1552. They can send an email to elitecombat8@gmail.com, or they can get in touch with you, Professor, or they can go to my Facebook, Dean Piles, or Dean Piles Martial Arts Athlete, or the Coward. I do want to say to Dexter real quick, I remember him competing in the NBL, and I'm behind everything he's doing. You know, I remember him competing in the NBL and all because we're close to the same age because I brought back diabetes from the desert.
Let me do an info. You're going to be at May 8th when we're on Chuck and Gina North, Sal Garza. You're going to have a Coward booth, and you're also going to be doing a seminar for us at the Night of the Masters. So everybody.
Yeah, we're doing tactical combat.
That with Dean Piles. He'll be part of Kata Wars and be doing a seminar, and he'll have a booth on The Coward, which is the movie that he's helping produce and starring in. And God bless.
And AJ, we're going to get back to work here pretty soon.
Yeah.
Looking forward to it.
Anyway, thank you, Wolverine, and I appreciate your time.
All right, you're welcome,
AJ,
sir.
You got something, AJ?
I was just telling AJ that we'll be getting back to work. We started the reads back Friday. And we're going to do some stuff, but we're going to be moving on, and I'm getting
to
everybody.
Oh, that's right. AJ's in the movie. He's a cop, isn't he?
Right, yes.
Chief of police.
He's the chief.
He's the
chief of police.
Okay. Well, thank you, Wolverine, and we'll carry on every week on topics that people either want to hear about or don't want to talk about, but that's what 3 minutes of the Wolverine's about, so God bless you, buddy. Talk to you soon. Okay. Dexter, are you there?
Yes, sir.
That's Wolverine. He's a character, man.
He said he served in Desert Storm as well. He said he brought back diabetes.
He was an animal. But anyway, I'm always part of the Legends of Name game. I'll mention you some names, and whether you know them or not, you can talk about it for 2 minutes, and I do it a bunch of names. You ready?
All right, let's see what's up.
Here we go. Chuck Norris.
Chuck Norris. Carlos Ray Chuck Norris. American martial artist, actor, film producer, screenwriter. Lone Wolf McQuaid. PKA, Professional Karate Association. He and Chuck. He and Joe Corley, teamed together to come up with the Professional Karate Association. He also did the World Combat League, where he had teams. He had teams with they ended up doing knockouts, and he would pay them for if somebody could knock somebody out. They wore boxing gloves, both in the PKA and the World Combat League. In my opinion, I think that took some of the techniques away from my martial artists when we wear boxing gloves. he did a number of military movies too. He did Army movies. Delta Force, I think, was one he did.
Yeah.
He did Delta Force. He served. I want to say he served in. I know he served in the military. I think he served in the Air Force.
Brother Willie was killed in Vietnam, and Aaron was, producer and director for a lot of his movies. But yeah. Chuck was in the Air Force.
He was stationed at Olson Air Force Base.
Yeah. But heck,
right,
he,
and I think
80,
he was an honorary Marine. Honorary Marine. And Bruce Lee, and he did
Return of
the
Dragon.
They did a movie together where they actually fought and became friends. golly, 3 minutes. Chuck Norris. Oh, yeah,
no.
He did the TV show
2 minutes.
Texas
You're
Ranger.
Done. You're done. Let's go to the next person. And I'm gonna hit
All right. Okay,
Columbia
I did
boys.
It. Okay, cool.
I'm going to hit you with some Columbia boys. Here we go. Michael Goldman.
Michael Goldman. All right. Hot dog. Good friend of mine. He was known for forms.
he was also known for forms. I went, there was a club here in Columbia called the Electric Warehouse, and he would win dance
that
contests.
That was my club. You know, I ran. I opened the first club in Greenville, South Carolina. We opened up one in Columbia, and we opened one in Myrtle Beach.
The Electric Warehouse. Electric Warehouse was your club?
That was my old club. I was a manager, and we bounced one to Columbia and one in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. For people to want to know about it, they go to Facebook and type in Electric Warehouse, the invention of a nightclub, and they can read all about it. You mentioned Electric Warehouse. That's funny. Yeah, Goldman was a disco guy, I remember.
Yeah, he used to win dance contests. He was also part of that team they had out of USC that traveled with Mike to go to karate tournaments with Keith Vitale, Tony Bell, Richard Jackson.
Michael Goldman, we went to Tampa one day in Winnebago with Sam Chapman and Bobby Tucker and Becky Chapman and Will Wright and Michael Goldman. His nickname was Hot Dog, remember?
That's right, Hot Dog. Hot Dog, yep. In fact, Hot Dog was just explaining to us when we were in Greenville that he fought in a tournament in Florida where he got kicked in the throat. Remember? You remember that? Were you
right?
There?
Well, I was in Tampa.
He got kicked.
He got kicked in the throat,
and they said they had damaged his vocal cords. They didn't think he'd ever talk, and he still talks, but he got a raspy voice.
Major producing now. He produces like the Grand Prix Auto Race and concerts, and he's a major producer now. So God bless Mikey. I have a flat belt in the museum.
And he's back in South Carolina.
He's been my friend for a long time. Now, he's with another Columbia boy, Marty Knight.
Yep.
You know Marty?
Yep. No, Marty Knight. He's got a school up in It's Anderson. He's got a school in Anderson, South Carolina. I know one of his, one of his big students was Rick Lee.
Rick Lee from Spartanburg.
Right, from Spartanburg. And then they had a student Jimmy Sherman ended up fighting. And I ended up fighting the Jay Bell when we went to his tournament. Rick Lee back in 1998, I think it was.
Jay was a great fighter. I remember him very well. Absolutely. Okay, let's hit you with another Columbia. I'll hit you with an old memory. Ronnie Barcoot, remember him?
Superman of the South. he got knocked out by
Joe Louis.
Who was
it? Joe Louis.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. That's
you hear
right.
that, Dean? Our old instructor knocked out Ronnie Barcoot.
Yeah.
You were just a kid when that happened, but Joe fought Ronnie Barcoot. He fought him in Columbia, didn't he, Dexter?
I think it was Columbia. I think I was 14, 16 years old then. It's hard for me to remember. I remember names. I don't remember dates that well.
Sam Chapman, can you talk about him for a minute?
Well, I know we went to in Greenville. I remember going to a number of his karate tournaments through the years, and I would fight this little short guy. Did Kenny Green go to? Was he one of Sam Chapman's students?
Yeah, Kenny used to go to Greenville. Greenville Karate School, Greenville. And
I remember him. I fought in one of Sam Chapman's tournaments and. I rode these bikes, did all this stuff for my legs, had real fast kicks, and I got there flashing my kicks and everything, and he would blitz on me and he beat me.
Middleweight or you a lightweight?
I was a lightweight, and then once
Greg
I hit
Cromer,
over 35, I was.
Greg Cromer, he was a lightweight under Sam. He fought a lot. Greg Cromer, remember him?
No.
I remember.
There was a guy I remember named Richard Sewell, but I think he was out of Flame Williamson School out of Charlotte.
You mentioned Richard. Did you ever remember Richard Jackson? He passed away years ago, but
Oh, yeah. I told you, I was Richard Jackson's sparring partner before he fought against, before he did
really?
His first full contact fight.
With Tony Lopez.
At Jennifer Clyde Studio. Yeah, I was helping him train to fight against Gordon Franks.
Yeah, you see, Dexter, I mean, I've been around a long time. All these guys were my friends. And you mentioned Gordon Franks, a super lightweight world champion. That was a hell of a right. fight, man.
Yep, and I got hit a few times to helping him train for those fights. But, Richard Jackson, he had that spinning back fist. Remember he had the spinning back fist?
Yes, he did. Yeah, spinning back. And he was a really sweet guy. We had some good times a long time ago. Well, listen, Dexter, thank you so much about your vision. And let's kind of talk about your invention on your belt buckle. You know, introduce that because we're going to do that May 8th. And you're actually going to give one away, I think. But talk about it. What it is.
So basically, I call it the Venom Squad. I was a martial. I watched a lot of Kung Fu Theater and all that stuff. And I was one of my favorite movies was The Five Deadly Venoms. So I came up with this. I got attacked by a wild dog, and the thing that saved my life was a belt. So I ended up turning that into a self defense weapon. So this is a self defense weapon system utilizing the design of the everyday present belt. That you use to secure your pants or a woman's trousers. Through the invention, the belt design has been modified so that the belt buckle can secure, hide, and release any one of the five blades from the set. So there are five blades. One is based on the lizard, which is a razor-sharpened knife-like blade with one point of entry. Then there's the snake that has the forked tongue of the snake blade, and it provides two razor-sharp knife-like blades with two points of entry. Then there's the toad. The toad is a blade that is a set blunt but weighted. This is solely for striking. The weight of this blade is for bruising and breaking bones. Then there's the scorpion. The scorpion blade is like a spearhead with three razor-sharpened points of entry. And then there's the centipede. The centipede blade is a razor-sharpened on one side and serrated on the other side, creating numerous points of entry. Then there's a military application, which includes venom of the named reptile. So that's pretty much the – and what it does is you wear it like a regular belt, and you have a release button in your buckle to where you can go ahead and release and pull it from your belt, and it comes out like a whip. And on the end of it, you have one of the five blades that you choose
cool.
to wear that night.
Well, I know you're going to make one for the museum, and you'll present it to me in May, but – We're gonna give one away at the event for some lucky person. And AJ's not allowed to have it because he'll dip his in poison. So we're not allowed.
Yeah,
to
you know what?
AJ
you know what, Gary? It's obvious Dexter's from down south because if you drive around Cleveland, everybody's pants are on their knees.
Well, like I said, he'll give one to the museum, but then we're gonna give one away right next year for some lucky participant in May.
So the plan is to give one to the museum, and five of them are gonna be given away as gifts at the.
No,
event.
Wait a minute, five. So that means listen.
Yeah. You asked for five. You asked for five.
AJ dips his stuff in poison, so. We gotta be careful if AJ wins one.
Oh no, I'm not passing out any with the poison in them. They're all gonna be just. They're gonna have the tip so you can ingest the poison into the blade if you want to.
Oh,
but
I'm
not gonna be dispensing any poison.
My voodoo belt.
No, don't say that. Well, Dexter, thank you so much for tonight's interview, and thank you for surprising me with Poodle. That was very special. I'll be calling you real soon. And your books will be on display May the 7th and 8th at the event that we're doing for Gina and Chuck Norris and Al Garza. And now how people get in touch with you if they want to hear about your books or hear about your invention, give them information.
So they can find me on Facebook at Books by Dexter Kennedy. My email is DexterKennedy@Hotmail, spelled DexterKennedy at Hotmail.com. Or they can call me at 803-665-8453.
Well, again, thank you so much. And ladies and gentlemen, remember May 7th and May 8th in Houston, Texas, the West Chase Marriott, the Living Legends and the honoring of Chuck and Gina Norris and the roasting of Al Garza. And A.J. Perry's going to be doing a seminar at the Night of the Masters along with Dean Pyles and Karen Ian Herdman, Terry Cassell, and Robert Hartfield, James Smith, and golly, my buddy James Cook. So God bless everybody, and I appreciate everybody's vision and what we talked about tonight. Thank you, Dexter. Thank you, buddy.
Thank you, man. Thank you for the invite. I appreciate it.
Okay, we'll see you soon. And everybody,
all right, you guys take care.
As we always say every week, much, much mahalo and aloha. Good night, everybody.
Night.
Good night.
Good night.